Right now, the Republican National Convention wrapped up last night with President Trump accepting the party's nomination in front of a crowd in the White House Rose Garden. During his speech, the president promoted his handling of the economy, the COVID-19 pandemic, and painted the Democratic Party as a threat to law and order and patriotism.
Our opponents believe that America is a depraved nation. We want our sons and daughters to know the truth. America is the greatest and most exceptional nation in the history of the world.
In a mixture of recorded and live talks throughout the week, speakers echoed those points, saying the country risked more violence and mob rule with the Joe Biden victory. They defended the president's treatment of racial issues in the wake of George Floyd's killing. Sam Martin is a professor of corporate communication and public affairs at Southern Methodist University. Her research focuses on conservative and evangelical voters. Sam, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
First of all, can you talk about the format of these conventions in an unusual year? Live speeches, recorded speeches, only occasional crowds. How did you think this all worked?
Well, it was surely interesting. If you're on the Democratic side, you know, you got to have Hollywood on your side. You saw a much more richly produced event. I think it was really maybe a little bit more obvious that the Democrats gave in to COVID sooner. They had things that were clearly produced in advance, and they had a smooth, seamless production that looked like it was ready to go onto Netflix right away. The Republicans, by contrast, just had really a lineup of speakers. They didn't have the kind of slick production feel to what they were doing, and it was just sort of one speaker after another. That doesn't mean that wasn't the look that they were going for. And so there certainly was a difference in the production effect and the digital nature of it. These are events, even when they're not digital or when they're not online, when they can be crowds, they really are meant to be watched by the already converted. And I think the already converted were the people who were watching, and to the extent that they reached voters who mean to be rooting hard for Biden or mean to be rooting hard for Trump, those people watched and they probably got fired up and they were reminded why they like the candidate they picked.
Can you talk about what you saw when it comes to Republican messaging along those lines, firing up the already converted?
Yeah. So, you know, if you can, you might look at these events and if, you know, if you were going to give them a scorecard, there might be a scorecard that you would look at and you'd say, okay, so how did the Republicans do when it comes to addressing important party groups? How did it do when it came to reaching out to the white working class? How did they do when it came to reaching out to those evangelical voters? How did it do when it came to reaching those folks who want to crack down on immigration? And they did an exemplary job hitting those notes. How did it do when it comes to creating party unity? They probably did okay, not as good as they might have done. How did they do when it came to commanding the news cycle? This was a really rough week to be a Republican wanting to command the news cycle when they had that awful tragedy in Kenosha that was taking people's time, when there's a hurricane barreling down. So I don't know that they got the news cycle that they wanted to get. How did they do when it came to rallying sentiment against the Democrats? That is the main goal of a convention, rally sentiment against the opposing team. Republicans coming out of there are really rallied against Democrats, and they really hit a home run on that one. And what about explaining the policies? I thought Trump's speech last night was inexplicably long, pretty boring. And they didn't even, you know, it was incredible. They didn't even have a platform. That, you know, conventions are supposed to be about laying out a platform of policies. So what are the Republicans for besides Donald Trump? Very unclear.
A big message was this idea that the nation would be in trouble if Joe Biden got elected because of safety and disorder. And you mentioned the events in Kenosha. Here's some of what President Trump had to say about that last night.
In the strongest possible terms, the Republican Party condemns the rioting, looting, arson, and violence we have seen in Democrat-run cities all, like Kenosha, Minneapolis, Portland, Chicago, and New York, and many others, Democrat-run.
Some have made the case that it's a tough needle to thread for the president. This is the fourth year of his administration these events are happening in, and making the case that they'll happen if Joe Biden gets elected. How successful do you think they were in threading that needle?
I think that Trump is, that's a pretty dangerous thing for him to do because, you know, the way that he was painting Biden in his speech, Biden being a dangerous threat, America being a dangerous place, one could get the impression from Trump's words that Joe Biden is already the president and that the dangers that are happening or the feeling of unsafety on America's streets has something to do with a Democrat in the White House, which is, I guess, why he's pointing so hard to the fact that these are cities that are run by Democrats. And he wants people to then make the link that if you have a Democratic president, it will get even worse. But people are pretty aware that the president is Donald Trump. And so there's some polling evidence. You know, I looked today at some polling evidence. There's some polling evidence to suggest that the protests are becoming less popular. So right after the George Floyd killing, there was real movement with people having some sympathy for the idea of structural racism. And there's movement that the protests are becoming less popular. But that doesn't, to my mind, necessarily mean it's smart for Trump to spend a lot of time talking about those protests. But rather, it might be that Donald Trump has spent less time pushing back against them. And so if he starts talking a lot about the protests and the fact that people are on the streets and people are angry, he might find himself again in a space where people are once again realizing that there are real problems of racial injustice and that Donald Trump has fueled them during the last 4 years of his presidency. So I think he should probably be careful here.
One group you've studied a lot, I know, Sam, is the politics of evangelical Christians, white evangelical Christians in particular, and their support for President Trump. How did you see this week's convention reaching out to them to maintain this, I think it's fair to say, very key part of the coalition that brought President Trump into office?
Yeah, so there was a lot of conversation about families, about school choice, about the politics of safety and security and sort of a suburban landscape where of idealism. And all of those calls are reaching out to those evangelical voters. The other thing that was very interesting to me and that you heard repeated by speakers at the RNC this week was a rhetoric around religious freedom and the right for people to worship in any way that they wanted, and the right of people to, of all faiths. They very often referenced this call to all faiths. And this, of course, was a very interesting conversation that the Republicans were having because, of course, Donald Trump in 2016 campaigned very hard on a campaign against letting Muslims into the country. One of his first moves as president was the so-called Muslim ban. And one had to wonder, you know, what non-Christians and certainly non-evangelicals might be thinking when they were hearing this idea that the Republican Party was the country, what was the party that was going to defend one's right to religious freedom. But that idea around religious freedom was toward evangelical voters. I just read right before we came on the air, I was looking at some data from the Pew Center. I was very surprised that it looks like the evangelical vote is as strong as it ever has been. There was some data early in the coronavirus period that looked like he was slipping there, but it seems like those voters are starting to come home. And that language around religious freedom and the idea that Donald Trump will fight for the right of these Christians to have the ability to worship without any kind of constraint is really the hymnal that they like to sing from.
We're talking to Sam Martin right now, professor of communication and public affairs at Southern Methodist University. We're looking at this week's Republican National Convention. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What was your reaction to what you heard and saw at the RNC? Do you agree with many of the speakers' theme that America feels under threat? Do you think that the president, on the other hand, isn't doing enough, paying enough attention to things like racial justice and the COVID-19 pandemic? What did you think about the format and the locations, the use of the White House in particular as a backdrop? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Sam Martin, professor of communication and public affairs at Southern Methodist University, looking at this week's Republican National Convention. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your reactions, what you saw that you liked, didn't like, what you are hoping comes out of this. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We've heard from some of our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page, one on the use of the White House as the backdrop for the president's acceptance speech yesterday. Christy writes, "That was one of the most jarring images I've seen. That was crushing to have the People's House adorned with political signs and a backdrop," Christy writes. Sam, what did you think of the use of the White House as the centerpiece here in the president's political speech?
It was shocking. It was, you know, I mean, it's difficult to put into words the way that that was a kind of norm breaking thing to have happen. If you know, the Hatch Act is something that was put into place so as in order to keep politics and the government, the governing of the people, separate. And it's there as a way to make sure that the president and the executive branch take care of the business of the people, all the people, regardless of whether or not the president happens to agree with, you know, with what's happening. And in previous administrations, you know, there's stories of, you know, George W. Bush in his administration, to go back to the last Republican president, you know, he would only talk about the campaign upstairs in the residence, or, and if you were like previous administrations, you weren't even allowed to put up a memorabilia that you had maybe bought off eBay from the Reagan administration at your desk in the West Wing. And the reason for that is because the right to govern, the right to serve the American people, was taken to be sacred. And so is this something that a lot of people care about? Maybe not. Is this a reason not to vote for Donald Trump for most people? Probably not. But it sort of was a stick in the eye of people who take the idea that being a president is a sacred or holy responsibility, and that house does not belong to Donald Trump. It belongs to the people.
One suggestion I've seen as we look ahead from the conventions is that this might actually be a very boring election when it comes to the numbers, if things like the coronavirus pandemic and the George Floyd protests haven't moved polling numbers much, and they don't seem to have, according to people I follow. What would?
Well, yeah, we have moved in, you know, if you know, in boring political science, we talk about how, you know, people vote according, we like to believe that we vote like bankers choose investments, and we sit down and we look at the issues and we weigh them out and we think, you know, should I put my money with this hedge fund or that hedge fund, or should I buy these stocks or those stocks? But, you know, it's really more like, what would it take to get the folks in Wisconsin to root for the Vikings? You know, the folks in Wisconsin, as I recall, didn't like start rooting for the Vikings when Brett Favre became the quarterback, right? Like, they just stopped liking Brett Favre. And it's really like that with political parties. Like, if you're a Republican, it's really difficult to get you to change your mind. And so, you know, to go to my favorite topic, evangelical voters, like, people ask me all the time, like, why don't these evangelicals, why don't they change their mind? Like, Donald Trump is not a Christian, they say to me. Why don't they change their mind? And I say to them, well, look, they've been Republicans for a long time, right? Like, they've been Green Bay Packer fans for a long time. And so the key is, you have to find a way to get them to look. You have to find a way to say, hey, I know you've been looking at abortion for a long time. I know you've been like rooting for that team for a long time, but you have to look. And I know you don't want to talk about politics, but you have to look. And so that is the key. Like, you have to realize that it matters who your quarterback is. It matters more than the jersey that you put on. And so is something going to break? so that Donald Trump doesn't get reelected when reelection is the thing that typically happens? I don't know, but we're choosing a quarterback. And the question really is, are people willing to, you know, root for a new team? Are enough of them willing, or are they not? And I don't mean to be suggesting that they have to be willing, but that's the game changer that we're really looking at. And there are a lot of opportunities happening right now for people who maybe supported Trump in the past, or people who went third party in the past, right? So 6% of the nation didn't vote for Hillary or Trump. If those people choose a side this time, those 6% of people who went third party, if they choose a team, that's going to make all the difference.
In our last 30 seconds or so, Sam, what are you watching for next now that the conventions are done?
I'm going to be watching the next 2 weeks to see whether there's any movement in the polls. And then after that, I'm going to be watching to see if Donald Trump keeps trying to, if he stays on this law and order message, or if he tries for something else, because I'm not sure that the law and order message is going to be one that works.
Sam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It was really my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Sam Martin is a professor of communication and public affairs at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. She joined us for a look back at this week's Republican National Convention.